live, dude.
Great. Welcome to another edition of EveryoneHatesCleveland.com, the podcast. My name is Jim Pete, joined today by Michael Hattery and Gage Will. Back-to-back podcast with all three of us, unless Gage has to go run off to put on a diaper. Not on himself, on his newborn, I think. All right, Gage. Gage, how's life going? I know I asked you this question like 20 minutes ago, but we've got to pretend that it's like the next day.
Very little sleep. Very little sleep.
What a prophet.
Oh, yes. This baby doesn't stop crying. That's all I have to say.
How often do you cry?
Oh, 24/7. I'm hapless.
I'm not going to lie. If you check us out on our YouTube channel, you got to look at Gage. I will say this, Gage, you do look a little tired. You got the bags under your eyes going pretty well. I'm fairly impressed.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Well, the good news is if you're checking out this YouTube channel, you don't see Mike like casually lounging on his couch.
He's casually lounging on a golf club.
Michael Hattery, how is life treating you in the fun confines of Cleveland, Ohio?
Oh, it's delightful, man. I am a true fan of Northeast Ohio. It is my favorite of venues. Got Bon Iver coming up on Friday, so if Ooh. Anybody else is there, give me a shout out.
Very Real nice
up about that. So, or Bon Iver, depending on your level of pretension.
That's Bon Jovi's brother, right?
No, it's good music, Gage. Good music, not related.
That's the name of this podcast. I don't care what positional preview this is. All right, we're technically here to talk about. We decided to combine this. I know it could go either way. You could either sit here and talk about these two guys forever, but I think we've done that on several podcasts and written several pieces about these guys. We're going to be talking about both shortstop and third base, and I think maybe the topical piece to talk about here is Francisco Lindor's calf. I guess from a pure sports standpoint, I'm very curious to see how this all plays out with regards to Lindor, because we've seen calf injuries in the past take out players for long periods of time. Obviously, 3 years from now, Francisco Lindor will be probably eyeballing a contract similar to a $400+ million contract, such as Mike Trout. I'll start with you. I gave Gage the floor first last time. So, Mike, I'm going to give you the floor first this time. An interesting, and I hate, you know, I don't know what the correct way to say this is, but if ever there was an interesting injury for the Cleveland Indians, this one is it, because when he comes back will be very interesting.
Yeah, this podcast should really be called Lonnie Chisenhall's Calf. but no, it is fundamentally interesting. And I mean, I think that there's a lot of personal certainty as to how to best handle calf issues and whether the Indians are handling them well, even though people see none of the day-to-day medicals. For instance, a personal certainty that if he comes back sooner rather than later, that the Indians have foolishly rushed him, or that if he comes back later than expected, the Indians have somehow bungled that in a way. not that I'm defending their medical staff. There are certain things that are frustrating over the years, but I think that there's some, you know, problematic assumptions being made about like medical timelines as somehow like scientific rather and like having some quantifiable certitude. Alas, this is not the case. So I do not care.
Gage, you know, I think the one fear that I had with this lineup after the losses maybe to it, and it was lack of depth and fear of injury. We've seen Lindor, of course, go down, and Jose Ramirez with a bit of a scare yesterday, 2 days ago. You know, is the fear that this Lindor injury is one of those that nag throughout the year, and because of that, this offense, which already has to be unique in structure, which we'll talk about throughout the year, the lineup makeup. Is this the type of thing that could make this lineup, for lack of a better term, more average to the rest of the AL Central?
Yeah, it's the one thing that could open the door for the Twins, I think, is a extended injury to one of these two guys. I mean, because even if you have a starter go down for a chunk of time, you still have four other horses. And with these two, it's and you can throw a Plutko out there for five innings every fifth day, and it's not going to damage you too much if it's only for a couple months. But one of these two goes down, and you just don't have – you just lose half your punch on offense pretty much. And I do kind of agree with Mike. I don't want to jump on the calf injury train because it's we've seen some horrific ones, but I think we have a tendency to kind of say, oh, this calf injury was terrible for this guy. Lindor's is going to be terrible too. And I just don't want to do that. I think there are different degrees of injuries, and I don't want to speculate too much there because it could just be a bang up calf that they're just being super extra cautious about. I don't know. We've all pulled calf muscles playing sports. You know how some of them feel for a day and some of them feel for a week. I just think you get a little run into trouble speculating about that.
I think long over the long haul. I mean, if you know, Lindor misses the bulk of say April, making sure that he gets healthy, as long as the Indians don't run out something like 0-22 in April, you know, I think that's something, you know, again, if we're talking about the AL Central being something that it's the Indians to lose, I think, you know, you can be a little bit cautious with a guy like Lindor, in particular with some interesting guys who are on this roster who can back him up at shortstop. All right, so enough with the injury talk. And we could talk a little bit about J. Ram's injury, but I do sort of feel like, you know, with the negatives that have come back, I do feel like we're probably going to see him at the beginning of the season, but we'll just kind of wait and see how that plays out over the long haul. All right, let's talk about these guys. And I think, you know, when you talk about Lindor and J. Ram, you know, you're talking about, you know, three of the top five or six players in the American League and three of the top 10 or 15 Major League Baseball players in all of baseball. I mean, I guess the big question here is upside. You know, you whenever you see a season like these two have put forth over the past two seasons, especially a guy like Jose Ramirez, who for many came kind of out of nowhere, you want to ask, like, when are you going to see their peak? So I'm just going to go ahead and ask that. Have we seen the peak of, say, is this like peak production for Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor over the course of the next four or five seasons? Or are we just sort of in that early stages of, because we are talking to two young dudes here still, are we looking at sort of the precipice of what could become, you know, a 7-8 war season over the next 5 or 6 years? And I guess that is what they did last year. So as far as peak goes, that's a pretty freaking good peak.
Yeah, we might have seen both their peaks already. And I think that can sound really disheartening, but I think it's because we have like a human ability to like undervalue like the greatness we see. Like Jose Ramirez posted an 8 WAR season last year, which goes down as one of the 15 best third base seasons of all time. yeah. Like, and I'm supposed to somehow I don't know, expect more of him. You know, it's like, oh, if he posts like three or four more, like five more seasons, he's a Hall of Famer. Like, I don't think people understand that, you know, just like the level of greatness we've already seen from Jose Ramirez and Lindor over these last like three seasons. So I do think a peak is pretty tough. I will say that I'll let Gage hit Lindor's peak. It's really important to me, and I will do this the remainder of his career, that people understand that if Jose Ramirez was treated and interviewed and, you know, like Joey Votto was, people would think about him like Joey Votto in terms of the adjustments he's been able to make at the big league level. He's someone who walks 4% more than he strikes out and literally just taught himself to swing at the bottom two levels of the strike zone in certain areas in high frequency in order to pull and like spike his ISO percentage. The sort of adjustments he's made are sort of like savant level adjustments that are really thought provoking. And to me, it will always be sort of frustrating that he doesn't get the respect he deserves as a really intellectually gifted hitter in terms of the adjustment he makes.
Well, and before I throw it over to Gage, and I think that's kind of what makes me, you know, when you talk about peak value, and the thing that intrigues me about Jose Ramirez is I think we saw him, you know, last season, you know, he was sitting at 7+ F4 with 2 months to go, you know, and I do think there's maybe another level for him. You talk about the way that he's adjusted his game, especially moving from second to third and back to second. You talk about how many games he played last year, and perhaps, I don't know, maybe he takes a break once in a while before he starts struggling. Just a thought. But I do think there's another level there. I mean, do you think that, you know, with the adjustments that he's made, he's come into camp extremely fit this year. I heard some rumblings at the beginning of last year that maybe he wasn't as fit coming into the season. This year is the complete opposite. He's come in a lot lighter, maybe looking to play the long haul. And we could talk about the reasoning behind Jose Ramirez and why people don't perceive him to be, for example, a Joey Votto. I don't really want to dive into that right now. That's for another podcast. We'll call that EHC at night so that maybe nobody hears what we have to say about that. But I digress.
Nobody's hearing it anyway.
I guess as I throw it to you, and I know Mike wanted to kind of segue to you for Lindor, Gage, but just really quick, you know, Jose Ramirez and the adjustments that he's made, you know, if you look at his hot zones, that's a really interesting look. I mean, I think Jose Ramirez has another gear. I mean, I think 8-WAR is great. I mean, I'm not trying to say he doesn't, but I think that Jose Ramirez, you know, when we talk about who's better, Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, I think both of them have another gear to go. Again, that gear may bring him to eight WAR throughout his career. Maybe the defense drops a little bit, but real quick thoughts on Jose Ramirez, Gage, and then segue over to Francisco Lindor.
So I have a take that kind of intertwines both of them, because they're both, as far as projections go and output last year, go very similar overall caliber players. And this is no way a shot at Jose Ramirez, because what he does is incredible. But I think what he does, and it's kind of a weird take, what Ramirez does is more repeatable than what Lindor does, but I think Lindor has a higher gear left in him. So I'm not saying Jose's tapped out, but I just find it interesting. Like, if you look at how hard each of them hit the ball, they end up in the same ballpark for their average exit velocity, but how they get there is two completely different vehicles. Lindor hits the crap out of occasional pitches, and he really, really gets into and mashes pitches. Like, if you look at the top 50 Indians exit velocity marks last year, I think Lindor had 15. He just hits the ball hard selectively. What Ramirez does is makes a lot of plus contact a lot of the time. So it turns into Ramirez's 39 homers being wall scrapers, while Lindor's 38 homers are no doubters hitting off the face again with second deck. And it's pretty fascinating to me.
Doesn't it feel like, Gage, that it's almost like Francisco Lindor is at the beginning of sort of this, I don't know, this discovery kind of what he's going to end up being, and he's still not there yet?
It does. And I actually think over the past couple years in the bigs, he started to pull it a little bit more. And I think it's because of a comfort level thing where he's turning on pitches and it's part of his power output. And I think he has another gear to go where he really starts pulling it 45% of the time or so, and unlocks even more, launches even more into that jet stream at Progressive Field. And like I said, it's no shot at Jose Ramirez, and I couldn't even begin to tell you who I think is better between the two. But I do think Lindor has an untapped level that maybe Ramirez doesn't have, and maybe I'll be a fool for saying this in 6 months. But
you're looking at like another gear for Lindor takes him to what, 9 F4 10?
Yeah,
and you just have Jose Ramirez at 8. You know.
yeah. Like I said, and I do think Ramirez, because he hits a ball harder more often, I do think that promotes a more sustainable skill set. Even though we saw him flame out at the end of last year, Lindor, I think he runs into a few more of those 105, 110 mile per hour exit velocities, and there's another offensive level even there.
All right, Mike, let's swing it over to you on Lindor. I mean, I think we've watched Lindor develop over the course of his career. You and I have been writing together since really the outset of his career. We watched a guy who a lot of people said maybe hits 10 to 15 home runs. We were always kind of high on kind of the beginnings of, you know, him kind of filling out. And I remember, I think we did a piece together way back in the IBI days talking about him potentially filling out and getting 20 home run power. Little did we know it was 30 to 40 home run power. It does seem, you know, I you know, as I was talking to Gage, and you and I have talked about Jose or Francisco Lindor's experimental phase, and Travis Sawchuk wrote a great piece last year, I think for The Athletic, maybe it was 2 years ago now, talking about Lindor sort of dialing in the zone, and listening to Gage talk about like Lindor's increase in pull makes me think that's part of the experiment that Lindor is going through right now before he becomes the ultimate hitter that he becomes. I mean, Mike, you know, as a shortstop, you know, playing a fairly demanding position, where do you see like the next 3 or 4 years for Francisco Lindor? I mean, it does seem like the potential for him to become kind of a once in a generation hitter at the shortstop position, and that says a lot considering some of the guys who have been there over the past 25 years. It does seem like the potential is there for him to become a year to year 40 home run hitter with decent average, decent on base, and become a middle of the lineup bat with really good speed and really good base running. I mean, he really is a complete package. There's more there, isn't there?
Yeah, enjoy him, to quote Paul Dolan. Sit back and enjoy him. He's special. He's like Lindor. They make fantastic adjustments. They put an insane amount of work into their game. And so you have intensely talented people who put in unmatched amount of work into becoming impactful. And that's what you have. And that's just the way it's going to be with Lindor. And you just really hope that these guys can stay healthy throughout the rest of their careers so that nothing really gets in the way. That's all I got.
All right. Yeah, I there's nothing really more to say there. I do have one more question. Where do these guys hit in the batting lineup? I mean, I think that we've actually gotten to some disagreements over the past year about potential spots. I mean, Lindor's been, you know, at the top of the lineup for the past year. Jose Ramirez, it's sort of been the malleable piece that is kind of, he can hit second, can hit third. Last year, he was kind of the guy kind of locked in at third, sort of swapping places with Michael Brantley. You know, I talked a little bit last year about moving Lindor into the middle of the lineup. If we ever got a player who could bat leadoff, we get Carlos Santana back. Gage, you put forth a lineup. I can't remember if it was on Twitter or just in a text conversation, doing that very thing, moving Carlos Santana up to that leadoff spot and moving Lindor into the middle of the batting order. I do want to just really quickly throw it to both of you. And Gage, I'll start with you since you agree with me. where do you see long-term Francisco Lindor? I mean, it seems it's interesting having him as a leadoff guy, but wouldn't it make more sense to have he and Ramirez hitting somewhere in the middle together?
I just want them hitting together. And this is going to sound ridiculous a little bit maybe, but I like the idea of those guys back-to-back. Maybe behind a Santana who walks with a Robo who also walks at the bottom of the order. Get some easy, you got to cash those walks in somehow. And I like the idea of going Lindor, Ramirez. And I'm not going to sit here and fret about the lineup too much, but I do want them back to back and in a position to maximize their plate appearances.
Let's throw it over to you, Mike. Close it out.
Yeah, I am absolutely all about Santana, Lindor, Ramirez as a group set. I just think that's what you have to do. You take, and the Prez thing is great too. You take your best walk rates and you take guys and put them on base in front of the two guys who put the ball in play the most and have the most power. It's just like so stupid simple. Like, get guys on base and let the two guys who put the ball in play for damage hit after them. All right, let's move on.
There's a decent chance that hashtag stupid simple becomes our motto of the year because that fits so many different things.
I swear to God, if I see Jason Kipnis hit two, if I see Jordan Leplow hit two, if I see Tyler Naquin hit two, if I see Leonis Martin leading off, I love the guy.
Oh.
Hope he's healthy. He should hit seven. If I see those guys leading off, I'm going to lose my mind.
Getting Leonis hitting leadoff. There is no way around that.
And I would be shocked if he didn't walk out accidentally in a Rajai Davis shirt. All right, I'm closing up the top on that. All right. All right. We are going to come back, talk a
negligence.
Little bit.
Negligence. We're going to. Damn negligent.
God, Hattery, you're editing this. All right, we're going to close up shop there. We will be back soon, probably sometime this weekend, with our outfield podcast, as well as our bullpen, which is, I think, going to be a fun conversation. I can't believe I said that. And, of course, our starting rotation. Guys, you got me on this Bieber bandwagon. That's for another day. Peace. Go Tribe.
Have a good night, everybody.